Don't forget to suck some titties.
I'm becoming a market fiend. I can see, you know, it's weird. It really is like, stock market is really like a casino. It really is. I can understand now, like, why guys turn into degenerates. I understand the Wolf of Wall Street. Wall Street money never sleeps. You know, I feel like in the movies, they may over-exaggerate the drugs, sex parties, and all that crazy stuff that comes with it. But at the same time, I can understand the rush. The only thing I don't understand about those is I don't understand the appeal of working for a institution, trading, making millions and millions of dollars a day for an institution while you get a set salary when you're the one that made the trade to make 20x. A lot of them don't really get commission on their trades either. But you get a nice hefty salary. And I understand you don't want to use your own money and risk it because you understand the advantages you have, the information you have working with JP Morgan or Morgan Stanley and stuff. At the same time, though, I really think, I think if under the right training, I don't know if you guys have seen this movie called The Boiler Room. It's a movie from 2000. It features Vin Diesel, of all fucking people, Ben Affleck, and Giovanni Ribisi. It's basically about this guy who runs an in-the-house casino that, you know, young college kids come to in the neighborhood. His dad finds out, kind of pressures him to find a real job. And believe it or not, someone, a friend of his that works at this quote-unquote firm that turned out not to be a real firm, but so he gets a job as a stockbroker. And the intensity and the excitement behind it. I'm watching the movie, and I'm not necessarily motivated by the fact I would never want to trade stocks for an institution. I would never want to be forced to trade so much in a day when opportunities may or may not be there. Because when you're using institutional money, a prop firm, there's a certain amount. You can't just be like, hey, I'm not going to trade today. Like, they're like, nah, we're trying to make money. You better figure some shit out. And you're like, let's... I wonder, can they actually go under on their own stock? It's pretty insane. Making money on your own loss. I guess that's how you balance it out. But I will say this before I continue about the movie. Jamie Dimon, who is the CEO, essentially, of JP Morgan. The guy who was... all the banks were bailed out by the U.S. taxpayers. And then for some reason, he has these public thoughts about, you know, the current state of the economy and bonds and all this stuff in the market. And how if we keep going down this path, you know, it's going to cause a lot of harm and pain. And I don't understand why we would take information from someone who has public vested interest and whether the economy fails or succeeds, because these banks make money either way. Sometimes they make more money off the economy failing than succeeding. And of course, they're going to tell people, oh no, don't get gold, don't get bonds, don't worry about this, focus on this. It's like, of course, you're going to direct people to the assets that you want people to be invested in because you financially benefit from it greatly. And that's why I'm very critical of JD Vance being a spokes for Bitcoin, even Trump having his own coin and getting caught up in this meme stuff, because the fact that we could just have a president, a highly official, who we have invested in currencies, invested in these things where they can promote and make infinite amount of money and stuff that they know is a cash grab. We know they don't believe in these Bitcoin stuff, these meme coins. We know they don't. But they know a very cult, vulnerable audience that just, hey, I like what you like. You know, they're going to pull their dicks out and stroke it for you. And that's just kind of how Bitcoin is. you tell anyone, if you just tell someone like, hey, you know, I don't know, it's not a, I don't think it's a great asset. They're like, oh, well, that's why you're stuck in the matrix, bro. And you're like, you can't even afford a full actual Bitcoin. So shut the fuck up. All your net worth is in a coin, is in a quote unquote stock, an exchange that you haven't even cashed out yet. So shut the fuck up. it's changing the world, bro. But no, the point I'm trying to make is, I was watching the Boiler Room, and I can see how something that is so mundane and boring, but the excitement of winning. And I think that's all really the beauty of trading and stock market in general, is just the art of winning. I think it's, was it Sun Tzu? The Art of War, where most, the battle is won before the battle has begun. And really entering the markets and stuff, it really is like that. If you go in hesitant with no plan, you've already lost. Because even if you happen to make some money that day, you know you didn't really make any money with any conviction. So you have nothing to consistently base a formula or a strategy with. Where you could go in with the strategy, get your asses handed to you, and be like, well, at least I know the stay away from Chipotle. it wrapped me up, all right? But point I'm trying to make is, I can understand the attachment of watching. It's crazy how when I was watching a movie, oh my god, these fucking spam artists. When I was watching the movie, forget the market finances and stuff. I understand the appeal and the gravitational pull of pop culture, the gravitational pull of filmmaking and what it can do. I can understand when that movie was made. Now I was 5 years old at the time when it was made. But I can understand if a, you know, a 20-year-old guy watches that movie when it comes out. I can understand a dude going all balls deep into this shit. Because you know what? If I had an interest in that and I watched that movie and I was looking for motivation, you bet your sweet bibbity. And a lot of people are like that in Wolf of Wall Street. I listened to a podcast a couple days ago about a trader who, he literally was inspired because of Wolf of Wall Street, you know, which I actually watched for not the first time, but for the first time and long enough where I forgot half the movie the other night. Yeah, shit holds up. I will say the only thing about the movie, there is a lot of editing weird cuts. There's a lot of auto dub voices where it's obvious they're not saying it, but they did it in post-production. And it's weird how movie is such a great scale, that high level of production, actors and script and story preparation. And people are like, who gives a fuck if the words don't match up to them? Who cares if the watch is on the wrong hand? Who cares if the scenery in the background is obviously fake when they were in Sweden? or Switzerland, wherever the fuck they were. When he was trying to hide all of his money. But the main thing I was watching, one, I was so impressed. About one, obviously, DiCaprio did an amazing job. Because if you actually watch Jordan Belfort, just watch like an interview or two, they obviously don't look the same. They're obviously a little bit different of stature. But the mannerisms of how they talk, all I could think about is this guy could scam 100K out of me if I had it. I could see this guy doing it. I honestly, if you're really trying to push some meme coin, he'd be your guy. What makes him a great salesman is it, well, he talks about tonality and stuff like that, the changes of tonality. I don't think that's really what makes him the great salesman to deceive you or to make you get stuff you don't want to get. I think what makes him a great salesman is that you kind of feel he's a salesman. And that's kind of weird to say because I hate salesmen. But I respect one that is, weirdly enough, he as good of a salesman and how he closes the deal, he never comes off as pushy. It comes off as, I'm going to actually make you really think about you not buying this shit. I'm going to make you regret it, make you think about it, but I'm never going to tell you, you need to buy this. Now, granted, this guy sold BS stocks. Like, so, keep that in mind. But that's the thing. He could have sold anything and done a lot of great value with it. But it is weird because we got people like him that are speaking to Oxford unions, these commencement speeches. And people are in the, like, they're applauding, listening to him. Like, they're listening to, you know, I don't even know how to explain it. Like, it's like they're in the audience, tuned into everything this man has to say. Like, this man discovered matter, you know. Like, this man's Isaac Newton from the dead, and we're just hearing a pin drop when he speaks because everyone's so in tuned and they're just glazing the guy. The interviewer's just glazing the guy. And this is at Oxford, prestigious universities, and that should tell you something. It's not about pedigree, it's not about what you've discovered, your great inventions. Your cultural impact is what matters at these things. You notice how a lot of these Oxford unions speeches, it's not even people that went to Ivy League or prestigious university. It's about people who made a cultural impact. Obviously, the movie substantiated it. But the cultural impact of him becoming a figure now where when you think of Wall Street, when you think of the insanity, when you think of scam artists, salesmen, and really the best salesman, you kind of have to be willing to be a scam artist. Because sometimes you have to sell shit that you don't believe in. Sometimes as a lawyer, you have to defend people that you think are deplorable. Even if you truly believe they didn't do what you're X, Y, and Z, you know enough about them based off the research and evidence that, you did kind of sleep with an underage person, but I could find some loopholes to say she didn't disclose her age, you know, X, Y, and Z. There's always ways that you can rationalize when you separate that you're trying to do your job and be a moral person. Now, going back to the boiler room, when they're basically selling BS stocks because it's not really a firm. It's a fake firm. And they're selling these penny stocks that are basically useless. I forget the guy. I think it's Harry. He's a guy. He has a wife and kids. And he decided, you know, they randomly call people and they basically trying to sell them this medical thing or whatever. You know, he had a regular job as a food supplier or whatever, but it wasn't like he was making 200K a year. Regular house, family kid. And he's pushing him on the phone, but he's like, you know, I really got to talk about my wife. And then the beauty of what he does in the sales call is He doesn't belittle him for asking his wife. He empowers him to, you deserve to make this decision yourself, you know. You make the money, all this stuff. And think about it as you're taking the initiative to financially create a better financial future for your daughter, for her college, or whatever his reasoning for doing these stocks. And he didn't necessarily think he was selling them the best stocks, but he didn't know they were complete crap the way. But over the phone, you don't have that attachment of if you were telling some person to their face that you might ruin their lives with this. But he decided he put $8,000 into something. He calls back like 20 days later because the stock's 20% down and he's freaking out. Like, I just want my money out. He's like, come on, you don't take it out when it's low. And convinces him to actually put more money, to have extra leverage, blah, blah, blah. You know the game. So if it even just goes up a couple more dollars, he gets his money back and he has leverage, blah, blah, blah. And so he does all that. And of course, stock tanks further down. He keeps calling back. You ruined my life. I need the money out, whatever. He can't do anything about it. Fortunately, and then to see the impact that had on him and his family. Literally, when the stock went to shit, he's sitting basically in the corner of his kitchen crying. And his wife takes the kids and they're basically like staying somewhere else because he fucked up. And it's weird how we could be sold something in a matter of minutes just because we feel empowered. The power of that salesperson to convince us, to make us feel like we are deserving of this opportunity that's been given. Which, if it was such a great opportunity, they wouldn't have to have someone expensively your ears off for 40 minutes to tell you how great it is. Sometimes, if something's that great, it's pretty self-explanatory. But that's just the beauty and the power of sales. Not to glaze the guy, because obviously I would never advocate the nonsense, that the fuckery they did. But sorry, I was just checking something for a second. But with that being said, it definitely makes sense how it could happen. So yeah, I don't know. Just like, I guess the point I'm trying to make of all that is I can understand how, especially in that time frame and nowadays, if you make movies about these great financial opportunities and all you have to do is trade some stocks, like, yeah, I can understand how someone could fuck their life over it, quote unquote. I can understand how that could appeal to someone. I think that's why they're more careful to make those movies nowadays. Back then, you could make movies like that and people just take it for entertainment. And that's, you know, I've watched a lot of movies recently from the late 90s, early 2000s. I watched Enemy of the State. I watched Speed. I've seen Speed before, but it's weird when you don't watch a movie for like 10 years, you think you know the movie, and then like you like, I don't remember this whole first 25 minutes of Keanu Reeves. I don't even remember Jeff Daniels being in this fucking movie. And them trying to save people in an elevator because the guy tried to bomb the bitch. I don't remember any of that. All I remember was them on the fucking bus. And that's where I thought the movie started. I'm like, when the fuck do they get on the goddamn bus? But watching the movie from the late 90s and 2000s, like, it's funny. I was watching Speed and just watching Enemy of the State. And the things I loved about it is that there was no crazy underlying message. There was no deeper understanding. I just wanted to watch something and enjoy it and not have it spelled out to me. Just be entertaining, action-packed. And nowadays, even those type of movies have, it's like you're always thinking like, all right, what's the message I'm supposed to get here? Like, bro, when you're watching Speed, bro, like, you're focused about is like, damn, when is this bitch gonna blow up? That's all you're thinking about. And, but yeah, I don't know, there's just something beautiful about just watching a movie and there's no crazy stakes in it. But in recent media news, so Bill Simmons and Pablo Torre, the quickest beef get-together in the history of beef, apparently, and I haven't seen the Rewatchables episode that all started this, but apparently, which was posted like a week ago in a movie on the Rewatchables, Bill Simmons kind of goes off. It doesn't really go off, like, probably like a 45-second minute clip where he just kind of shades Pablo Torre. I used to always call him I forgot. He always reminded me of like Pablo. Yeah, the show Pablo. Backyardigans. I think that's what it is. But he basically shamed him because he's doing this whole media tour, an obsession with Belichick and the worst PR girlfriend in the history of PR girl. The whole point, you know, I think what makes the situation worse, there's sides of truth, right? Like this whole Jordan Hudson and Belichick thing, like, yeah, the age gap stuff speaks for itself. We all know, and now there's some deeper stories about they actually met when she was 19 on an airplane. And the thing is she's trying to be a PR person, but the whole point of PR is most 99% of the times, the public, the media, should not know the name of the PR person. Especially the general public. Maybe the media, because they have to have sources and blah, blah, blah. But they don't even talk about who the PR person is. The problem is, she's a PR person. You're supposed to suppress unnecessary attention you don't want. And yet, you are the bigger attention. So by default, she's not doing her job well. I have a theory though. I do think that this is kind of all on purpose of she's trying to detract the distractions from what Bill Belichick's reputation has been over the years, and she's trying to change that in some way. But as I was saying, and Bill Simmons just basically kind of, he's like, yeah, I don't really see the fucking point. like, what are we doing here? This isn't like journalism. This isn't really what we're in this to do. So they go, and apparently the next day, they record an episode together. And it's like an hour and a half. Well, their interview is like an hour, 30, whatever. And I've watched a good portion of it. And people made jokes like if this was boxing, this would have took 18 months just for them to come together and talk about it. It's weird how instantaneous. And that's the one thing I respect about someone like Bill Simmons. Like, yeah, he'll say stuff to get under people's skin, but he'll talk about it with you. And the weird thing is there's a lot of people, and even Pablo tried to do it. When these controversies get caught up, they try to switch the, oh, well, here, how about you come on my podcast and we could talk about it. I was like, no, I'm not coming on your, I have the number one sports podcast. I'm not coming on your podcast. If anything, you're better off coming on my podcast. He's like, oh, yeah. And that's a way, and he even, and that's part, like, it kind of came off, like, you're trying to use this as a promotional thing. And Bill's like, nah, just come on mine and we can talk about it. And it was weirdly, it was oddly like, you could feel the tension a little bit, but then it kind of loosened up and you could see like, they actually talked about it. Maybe the misunderstanding what's happening, why, and there are times at ESPN and how that turned, and kind of like they started to come to like a legitimate like coolness and understanding. Now, Bill's still not a big fan of it, and to be honest, it's kind of weird to obsess over it. To, I don't know if it's really journalism to do all this stuff, but at the same time, Jordan Hudson has kind of put all the unnecessary tension on them to where it's hard to, like, whether I think people should be doing X, Y, and Z. It really doesn't matter because you put it all out there, so people are going to do it. So, yeah. Now, that's the life of Pablo. Today's drink, Jolly Rancher, C4. I know she knows. Deep down she knows. She knows. I know she knows. Meow. Sorry, I was trying to get the cat's attention. You know, cats are weird. I was looking at my cat earlier from over the bed. And all I see is just, like, her little pointy ears. She hops like a bunny. I'm starting to think, you know, they say cats. Are cats really just these lab-made little creatures? Like, it's almost like because they have teeth and they hiss like snakes. But they have ears like bunnies. And they just have the stare of a lion. It's like weird. They have all these different attributes. So maybe that's why I don't like the water. it's mostly water weight. Yeah. You know, I had this conversation with someone very close to me, and they were all very, you know, you should be careful about what you put out there. And, you know, you should change the name of your podcast. You know, you should change. You shouldn't have your name on the internet and stuff like that. You know, because, you know, you worry about jobs firing you over it or jobs not hiring you. And to me, the way I look is I'm not going to let some job that's going to pay me not enough money to not do this. And to me, you can't pay me enough to not have my opinions and voice that I want to be heard. It's really that simple. Once you succumb to pressure, and look, and I have to accept they have a right to be like, we don't want you to work here. Okay. But I'm not going to just stay here at a job at the expense of me not saying my piece or my thoughts that I put out voluntarily into the world. When you do that, you're letting jobs that don't even pay you enough to keep a roof over your head over a long period of time to tell you what you can and can't say. And even if you do get paid well, let's say you do get paid 70, 80K a year. Is that enough money worth for you just to sit down and shut the fuck up because you don't want to ruffle feathers if it's the right thing to be said? Because if you could be shut up with money, that means in a workplace, if you were to see some fuck shit, that means you could be bribed. Because if you're willing to shut up for free, you could shut up for nothing. That made no sense. If you could shut up for free, and you can shut up for a little extra money. Everyone has a price. And I get that. But I'm just not one of those people, man. Like, I'm not gonna, it doesn't make sense to me to sit here and not say certain things because my job may fire me. Like, you know what? If they fire me because of some opinion I have when I know a lot of their opinions. Go the fuck ahead. I ain't scared of nobody. You know, it'd be funny. I wish I were to go on an interview. And they'd be like, hey, you know, we were doing some prep for this interview. And they pull out some iPad and they show one of these videos where it's me talking about sucking titties. Like, you know, we just don't think this is a right fit. I'm like, so you don't think a grown man sucking titties is a right fit for this? I see a lot of grown men here that wish they had a titty in their mouth. When's the last time your wife's breastfed you? Paying all the attention to your little dweeb. Are you sure the child's yours? Is she letting that baby suck her tit every night? Not you. And not giving you a second thought. How's that feel? So, don't forget to suck some titties. That'd be a wild-ass interview. Oh, God. That would be fun as hell. To go on an interview and someone clipped up all the wildest shit I've ever said on this show. I wish they would. I wish a bitch would. Why did I say that? I wish a bitch would. Yeah, I wish I would. You know, it's good times. But that's the sad part, you know? We do feel pressured to just feel that with enough money, with enough power, like, I can, it's the equivalent of, I never understand people. Like, you hear it in the movie business, or you hear from VR directors, or AR directors, and music, and it's typically entertainment, where it's very, we choose you to work here. It's about picking you. It's about, we're going to make it to where you're feel like bottom of the barrel, so you feel so fortunate when we pick you to get nude in this movie anyways. And that's real when you break down what, like, an entertainment, like auditioning. Like, yes, you got to have talent, skill, and all that stuff. But the reason why you hear these actors, and it's always so cringy when they're like, you know, I was just so thankful for the opportunity to be given this part. And they just like, they acted like, no pun intended, but they act like this director is literally God. Like, figuratively speaking, they're like sucking these people's dicks. Just because, oh, they gave me the opportunity of a lifetime to not be part of a union and to sacrifice my SAG, and, you know, and when I see that, it's because when you think about what an actor probably has to go through for years and years of being told no callbacks, like, not even being taken serious, you're being embarrassed, you feel hopeless, and then things start going your way, and then you get one person that gives you a chance, and then you succeed, and then it's just like you owe that person debt for the rest of your life. And, like, you know, it's always cringe watching this stuff, because it's really just the feeling of being picked. It's a pick me business at a certain point. Until you're, like, at a status where you have the power, you have the money, you have the power, you're really just a pick me. And that's the only way you can tell people that are making 6 figures, 7 figures, 8 figures for these movies. That's the only way you can make them feel less than powerful, is by reminding them you were chosen. You didn't earn this, per se. Not all actors are like, there's a lot of actors, they're pretty normal about it. Cool, like, hey, you know, it's cool, you know. Like, I've never seen Matthew McConaughey just, like, go over a glaze fest and cry because he's just like, yeah, man, you know, I went in there and did my thing, you know. He feels like he's one of those, like, he has that confidence. kind of turns you gay a little bit. I'm not going to lie. he has that confidence where he's like, no, I deserve to be here. I'm here for a reason. I'm not here because, you know, I had some movie I did 3 years ago that knows the producer and he gave me a shot and then someone dropped out and I did this. Like no, I'm fucking here. I'm Matthew McConaughey. But that business and these jobs and stuff, like they do everything to remind you that you're here and queer. But it's that constant of you got to always live in fear by what you say or do because it's a representation of us. And yes, it is. Like, people should be fired when you do some fuck shit. And I'm saying a company has every right to get rid of you. If they don't feel like you say something on social media, whatever, that's not reflective of their values or whatever, that's fine. But as an individual, if you're someone that takes what you say, what you serious, and you have your opinions and you live by it, you know, there's a time and place. You know, don't go to work and just be like, you know what, I hate fat bitches. No, you know what, it's not necessary. But if someone on this show says, I hate fat bitches, I mean, hey, they hate fat bitches. I'm P-H-A-T, not me. I love a fat bitch. That sounds so wild. Because I'm a fatty, you know. Coke, all fatties collide. Which is like one big beach ball just bumping into each other. Come here, fatso. But the point I'm trying to make is I, you know, you cannot let companies, corporations who, you can't let them dictate how you live your life. You can't let them dictate things that matter to you. Like, hey, look, I'm going to do this. If you want to get rid of me, that's your right. I'm not going to like go back and forth. I'm not going to go on social media and shit on you and all that. Well, I probably will shit on you, but not for that. I'm not going to shit on you for it. Because I get it. I wouldn't want someone, if I ran a media company or podcast network, I wouldn't want someone to work for me that's annoying as fuck or that causes more issues than it's worth. But different businesses have different things of where that matters. Or something like this, someone who's always voicing their opinion, bringing attention, is probably more of a good thing than a bad thing. Now, working at Target? Probably not. So, yeah, you just gotta, I always just say you need to just be okay, like, this is what I do, and I gotta understand what comes with the territory, and if something happens, I just need to adjust and pivot, and find something different, or, you know, do whatever I need to do, and I'm okay with that, as long as you're okay with that, that's all that matters. At the end of the day, it's about you. I will say, you know, this is a much better episode today. Much better. Thank you, know, you guys don't know because the camera is above the belly button, but it's Elmo's world down here. I'm getting a little bit too bummy, too lax out here, you know. couple weeks away from being evicted if things don't go right. And I'm over here just like, well, 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 come here, you little fat hoe, cat, slut, bitch ass. Speaking of, so the ex, I think she was the ex speaker. Not speaker of the house, but basically that John, what was her name? She's independent now. You know that woman who would always speak when Biden was in office? The one who did Caroline Leavitt's job? I think it's like, let me look her up. Make sure I say her name right. It was like literally in the news. Jean-Pierre. Karine Jean-Pierre. She's a former White House secretary. She was the one who spoke every day in the House, basically speaking and all that stuff. She's officially left. I didn't realize she was 50 years old. Holy shit. That's a compliment. God damn. She looks young as hell. Like, she looked like young 30s. She looked like late 20s, early 30s. Holy shit. God damn. No offense to the current girl, but, you know, she had a few nose jobs. She's, it's crazy. The new girl, Caroline, she's like 24. But she looks, you know, close to the 30. And I'm not saying she looks bad, but with the extra work, you know. I understand she got the work to probably look more mature and stuff. And she's married to like an older guy, but whatever. She's literally half of this woman age, and they look like the same age. If not, she looks a little younger. But yeah, she's apparently leaving Democratic Party. Now, I don't really give a shit because I don't care about politics. She's doing it to be independent. But I think it's going to show when people leave office, they're just tired of it. They see the BS, and I commend her because you just see the BS. I think every time when people leave office now, all their subsidiaries, they either go extremely the opposite way or they just want nothing to do with politics anymore. I think that's becoming more the norm because people are seeing at these extreme levels of power, executive branch, like, there's too much corruption. There's not enough. It's not worthwhile anymore. Whatever, like, great. She has a thing on her resume, and then everyone just remembers her being a part of an administration where people make jokes about the president having dementia, can't walk, and she has to speak and deal with the stress of articulating a lie to America every single day of the health of the president, the state of what's going on, lying about foreign affairs. Because that's really what their job is. It's essentially masking what's really happening so people don't freak out, or kind of toning stuff down, blah, blah, blah. And that's what you're kind of seeing. Like, that seems like the worst job in the world. Like, you're basically a salesman to the America. Because your job is to try to ignore or mitigate the side effects. Or just try to acknowledge, like, yeah, there's some that exists, but we're trying to focus on what we can control. Your asthma. And it's weird because that position, secretary, speaker, whatever, It's, you need to be obviously good at speaking, but you need to be able to also be confident under pressure. When you got all these questions coming at you, you gotta, your job is to literally say nothing of significance. You say enough, but not enough where people can take it somewhere that's not necessary. It's kind of your job, right? But yeah. God damn, she looks young as fuck. Like, this is true. Black don't crack. Guess goddamn. But yeah. Yep, yep. Good times. You know who I think is a played out person in media? And honestly, thinking in about 2 or 3 years, they're going to be a non-factor in media. DJ Academics, right? And there's nothing that's happened recently news-wise as far as that. I know he's got like the legal stuff or whatever. Well, it's more than just legal stuff. But that's not even what I'm talking about. Like, I've come across, you know, it's weird. I go down like random rabbit holes, right? He is the definition of a front runner. And I don't think he has the connections like he says he does. Like, now he's got the money and all that stuff. You shit on rappers. You shit on rappers and stuff for not being this and for all fucking the same girl. And then you end up fucking the same girls. And they don't even really fuck you, apparently. but I was going through some older stuff from a few years ago where he was all over Flagrant doing these interviews, shitting on, if you guys remember, the Rory Mouse situation where they separated from the JBP, got fired, blah, 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 started on the show. And Academics are going, and he just flames them every chance they get. The bare minimum boys, they're not this, you know, they were holding back Joe and all this stuff. Basically, blaming them for being lazy. Him and Rory has some personal stuff. All this stuff, right? Looking back, all this stuff, it's like, you're really looking back. And in real time, a lot of this stuff, when people are easy targets like Rory now, like, oh, you were leeching off Joe and all this stuff, which I never felt that. I've always been, honestly, when they were part of the JBP, I watched more for the dynamic of Rory and Joe and then the inclusion of Mal as well. They had a great trio dynamic. And that version of the JVP, to be honest, I think is more entertaining. It feels more like an original true podcast feel than what it is now. I'll admit, I do still like clips of the JVP now. But I think the episodes, like, it feels too, I know it's going to sound weird, it feels too, like, produced. It feels too talk show-ish. Like, the setup is just like this big open room. There's no closeness. Everyone's a little bit too relaxed. There's no urgency when speaking. It's 6 or 7 people speaking. And the topics have kind of, it steered away from that natural flow of the film, more like a Q&A and stuff. But that doesn't mean the show is bad. It's just a different show. And that's probably how Joe wants it. Like, hey, I wanted this to be bigger than just music and stuff. And that's great, right? But I personally, I love the older version better. But whatever. Now, Rory Mal did their own thing. And I'll be honest, I watched a few of the first couple episodes. And here and there, I'll catch some stuff. But I'll be honest, I don't really watch the show anymore, but I'll catch clips. I still like them, though. I still like Rory. I still like Mal. But sometimes, man, it's like once you enjoyed people in one dynamic, you just don't really, it's hard to accept the different version. Because, yeah, the Rory Mouse show now, even through the iterations of Damaris and Julian leaving, which is a whole nother thing, I feel like personally, Julian, if you guys know the situation, it feels like he's trying to leech on to this breakup that happened like 8-9 months ago, if I remember correctly. And it seems like he's still trying to leech off it for sympathy and to kind of grow his own show. And I don't like being the person like, you're using someone's bigger show and popularity to help grow yours. But if you notice, his first couple of episodes that helped catapult the show was basically him talking about the breakup and how he was screwed over and people got on his back. Then he started doing his own thing and, you know, he still gets like viewers, but nowhere near the amount he got to start off. And then all of a sudden, because views have kind of tapered off and stuff like that, and honestly, and I genuinely feel bad, it feels like he's going through some stuff. Like, he looks like he's, I don't know how to explain, I feel like he's been drinking a lot. He's wearing the glasses, he seems a little depressed, I get it. You know, I'm not going to shame the guy for it. But it seems like he's using the situation again to just continuously make his show. And the problem I think he's going to run into is that situation is going to be the only reason why people tune into the show. And it would be better if you just steer away from it and just grow your show the way you want to. And using, because now, if you constantly always use that as a way for people to gain traffic, people are only going to come to your show for that. So, but whatever. But going back to academics, I think what makes them kind of, when you look back, like, he has such a propensity to just want to flame and go on and call everyone trash and all this stuff. It's like he doesn't even, he tried to do a show and doesn't even do it anymore. I'm sure he Twitch streams and all that stuff. I know he still makes a lot of money. That's not really the point. But there's also a difference between people actually making money doing the thing and then people making money talking about the thing. And I think academics, like, no one really values his aggressive gossiping opinions. Because he made a lot of his claim to fame when the Lil Durk stuff was going off, or Gunna, or anytime NBA Youngboy stuff. Like, that type of era of rap, anytime he would flame them for not being real and all this stuff, right? Go into their personal life and stuff. And now, I think because a lot of his personal life has been exposed, he's not really out there as much. I don't think people really have him as the same media stature. He still has a name in that type of media. But I think, honestly, academics, he's kind of a waning figure in hip-hop culture. Really just media in general, to be honest. And his thing is always going to be he has more money than everyone else and all that stuff. And that's great. It's not really the point here. Because you're going to have to do that type of stuff to continuously make money. And when you get 40, it's really weird to be doing that type of shit to make money. Like, the internet is a joke until it's not a joke. So, I don't know. But look, Rory and Marl are doing fine. I do think they're trying to do a different thing now, because now they're part of The Volume, which is Colin Cowherd's podcast network, which is a shift I never thought I would see. And I do think they're trying to do a little bit more of the sports angle. And I don't know, like, the ironic part is when they were on the JBP and they would talk about sports, the things that made it funny was when you were listening as a consumer, you realize they don't really have a great gauge of sports when they're talking about it. And that's kind of what made it funny and interesting. It's weird because the Joe Budden podcast, it's probably bigger than ever. It's more successful than ever. Rory Mal, they're successful in their lane for growing it from where they are and stuff like that. But with that being said, I think they miss each other. I know they don't miss each other. I just hope like 2 or 3 years from now, they just do like a reunion pod. Like maybe they put a lot of this shit in the past. They're both doing great. It may be hard, but I really hope they do, because I just think it would be good karma-wise. I just think it would be good for the OG listeners. But yeah, because, you know, the JBP, you know, and I think I talked about this before. I remember when I was a delivery driver. This was like 2020, 2021. This is what really got me into podcasting. Is when I listened. And I was like, man, it would be really cool to do that. And really, I wanted to do it with a friend. And when I would listen to Rory, Mal, Joe, it reminded me of like similar conversations me and my friend would have. And look, it's on my YouTube channel. If this show ever becomes big, well, you can look it up. We did a few episodes, but it was very hard to get two people scheduled, and then sometimes we have multiple people, have 3, 4, 5 people scheduled online at the same time. It would be hard. But, you know, I remember when I was delivering, that would be the best part. Like, I would be at work 9, 10 a.m. And when those episodes would drop at 8 a.m. on SoundCloud, or when I finally got Spotify 9 or whatever, like, I just knew, like, bro, today's going to be a fine day. I'm going to make money, listen to this, relax in my vehicle. Like, this is what my whole day is going to be. And just listen to that show, you know, that's why I have a closed vest to it. That's why I care about it. They made it feel like it was just three dudes talking shit in a basement. And a lot of times they were. And now you realize, you don't realize the work it takes until you actually start doing it. You don't realize the work it takes to have three people on the same page, people to show up on time, people to prepare, people to be in tune, to have Parks, the producer, be putting all the shit together, preparing the studio, post-editing, all that stuff. You don't realize how much work it takes until you do it. But that's the thing, like, you wouldn't put yourself through the work to continuously do it if there wasn't that great sense of inspiration. And Joe, Rory, Mal, they created that great sense of inspiration for me. And I think everyone can relate. Like, there was something that inspired you. And you didn't know everything that came with it until you started doing it. And you realize this is a lot more work than I thought it would be. But it's fun. It's enjoyable. It's enjoyable. So, yeah. You know. Trip down memory lane. Yeah. But that's why I love it, man. Over time, stuff will change, your interests will change, the type of shows you listen to will change. You know, I went from just being a complete podcast nerd to now I've become more into different aspects with trading. I either like listening to very just absurd, irreverent comedy podcasts like Tuesdays with Stories, or more of a general interview show like We Might Be Drunk, or listening. I don't even listen to Joe Rogan anymore. Not because I dislike the show, but you know, there's certain, I think I go through different phases where there's certain times I just want to listen to a 3-hour interview of certain information or topics. Sometimes I just want to listen and have people say absurd shit that make me laugh. Sometimes I want to listen to stuff that people like me on a small scale doing small podcasts. Sometimes I want to listen to, you know, just a crazy, I don't know, like Kill Tony type of podcast. You know, it's weird. Interests change over time, and that's okay. But the thing is still the same that I love. So I think that's all that matters. Just continuously do what you love and adjust with the times. But yeah. And also some, you know, because I've been thinking about this, you know, regardless if your world's crashing down or you feel like there might be a lot of change in your life and stuff like that, I think also remember, like, you're young. Like, these tribulations, they don't last forever unless you want it to last forever. Like, I'm 29. I'm in a part of my life where I never thought I would be okay with letting everything bottom out. I worked really hard to be in a good position. And sometimes it's like, I would rather bottom out and start fresh. And I think it's just sometimes you just got to be okay with change might be coming. And all you can do is focus day by day to continuously live the life you want to live and try to do better for yourself. And remember, it'll be okay. You got time in life. Like, you may bottom out at 29, and you never know. By 31, you may be in a better position than you've ever been in your life. So I think the biggest thing is just roll with the punches. Don't be inclined to peer pressure to what people feel you should do. You got to follow your heart. You got to follow your sense of direction and know that you're doing it for the betterment of everyone involved. So that'd be my message. You know, as a guy in this world, you're going to get criticized whether you have a job, don't have a job, whether you make a lot of money, don't make a lot of money. So you might as well just go down the path that you feel will give you the most satisfaction and maybe the most beneficial financially. And I think a lot of people, there's this fear in this world. There's a lot of fear pushed into you. There's a lot of these women out here pushing about, you know, being with men that make a shitload of money and being with men that have stable jobs and all this shit. And then women leave men with stable jobs all the time for instability. Now, I'm not saying that for anything, but all I'm saying is you can't base the decisions you make because if you think, quote unquote, stability for the stability for the short fucking term is not necessarily gonna create the stability you seek, because stability only matters if that's actually the way you want to build stability. And that's the thing. People don't realize that, quote unquote, stability comes with the cost. Stability can sometimes come with time away. You have time away, It distances your relationship. You have kids, takes time away from that. Okay, you work less. Now you can't do as much, but you have more time with the kids. Have more time with your partner. But then they're unhappy because you can't do much now that you got more time because you have less money. So there's a trade-off. I'm just speaking for the common man. You know, I don't have these problems because I don't make enough money to worry about anything. Nala, chill the fuck out. Always looking like you're gonna attack something. You can't even beat a fucking roach. But you gotta... It's all these things are in our... It's in our heads. I'm not trying to sound heady or zen. But when you really think about the power of money, when you really think about perception, it really is true, you know, where people will criticize you no matter what you do. People will say you don't have a real job, even if you make real money, making more than they do. They will tell you you don't have a real job. There's no guarantee, there's no stability. Yeah. There's no guarantee with what you do. There's no guarantee that you could walk into work tomorrow and the whole building is shut down. There's no guarantee to anything. But I'll be damned if I sit here and think in the back of my mind, I'm stable because whether a company or an individual wants, may or may not want to do one day. Like working for someone, and they may wake up one day and be like, hey, you know, we got to save some money around here. Wouldn't take a pay cut. And that's the thing, you know, you really only have stability when you can control your expenses, your livelihood, your well-being. Because where you're stable in one place, you're probably unstable somewhere. They're just, for most people, in the current environment we live in, you typically kind of have to pick and choose what areas you want to be stable. Sometimes you could go all in on one to overcompensate for something else. You could balance both out and just be halfway incompetent at both. Or you just be a complete piece of shit and just be like, I don't give a fuck. Fuck them kids. So, at the end of the day, you got to really just choose a path, accept what comes with it, and except that it may take more time than you and other people may initially desire. But if you really trust yourself in something, you know, at the end of the day, you gotta live a life that's fruitful to you. Because if you don't have a life that's fruitful to you, you got no fruit to give to anyone else. So, there you go. Be handing out those fake cotton candy grapes. Alright, I think I'll end it there. That was episode 340. I don't even know what episode. I might merge this into one. I don't know. Of the Offbeat Podcast with Clint Nelson. I'm your host, Clint Nelson. Don't forget to like, follow, comment, subscribe, and the notification bell must